as usual, you know I gotta start off with my monthly devotional or spiritual poetry, whatever you wanna call it. This one I call Marching On. People don't talk much about the month of March. There's nothing special that usually comes to mind when most people think of March. But I must still be caught in that honeymoon stage of Christianity because I still get up every morning and write in my prayer journal. I always started off with, "Dear God, thank you for waking me up today." Then I write my prayer and praises. Then I sit and meditate on my life and how good God has affected me so far, with wonderful changes in my life and what I can do next to serve him better, or if I'm putting my all into something he's already guided me to do. I notice my senses have become more alert. Now, things I used to didn't pay attention to, I notice now. Things I once didn't take time to appreciate, I now love. Like, for instance, the month of March. Have you ever noticed how dirty and soggy things are? Everything seems to be in the month of March. Old leaves and trash left underneath the melted snow seems to stand out more in March. At least to me it does. Then I realize it's the earth getting ready for spring. It's calling for a cleansing. Just as we do our homes. Isn't that smart of God? Isn't it almost like telling you to get ready for something? Get yourself cleaned up for something. So I went outside and raked up the little dirty leaves from around my yard from last year off my lawn and cleaned out the debris from my gutter. And oh, how the earth smelled, the perfume coming up from the dirt. I like that underneath my lawn. It seems to cheer up the spirit. And then I noticed this month, Easter's coming in March. So don't that say something about the month of March? So then I got to thinking, I think I'll do something special for March this year. I'm going to give these folks my testimony. When I was born premature. I was pronounced dead at birth. I was born in 1965 in Children's Hospital. My mother said I came out all purple, all shriveled up and blue. Not a sound came out of me. The doctor just threw me in a little silver tray and said, "This child is dead." And the nurse looked at the little pitiful thing and thought she saw something go. So she picked it up and started sucking the snot out of it. And back then, for a nurse to go behind the doctor, after he pronounced the baby dead, for you to go behind the doctor, that would get you immediately fired. But she started sucking the snot out of me, and something sank. And my mom said, "No, that's my baby," the one she was going to put up for adoption because she couldn't afford to take care of any more kids. She said, "That's my baby's alive." And they weren't supposed to let her see the baby because she had already signed the papers, and the nurse gave her that little baby. And I'm just she said I was no bigger than the palm of her hand, under 4 pounds. And she said, I want them adoption papers back. I'm not giving away my baby." But all the excitement and commotion went on. They forgot to put the drops in my eyes, so I almost went blind. Today, I stand here with 20/20 vision. Today, I don't look like I was born under 5 pounds. I have the allergies to almost all foods. I carry an EpiPen with me everywhere I go. To this day, I've never had an anaphylactic shock reaction. Almost once I came close to it, I ate plantain, and I broke out in welts all over, and I got a scratchy throat, but that's the closest I've ever come to it. Doctors always say to me, "How do you live? You're allergic to all plant life, you're allergic to all foods, you're allergic to dust, you're allergic to all trees, you're allergic to 5 types of penicillin, so it's hard to treat you when you get an infection. How do you live? You should be in a glass bubble." I used to say, "I don't know." I used to think I was Murphy's Law, whatever could go wrong, goes wrong with me. I was attacked by a rat at 1 year old, and you can't see it now, because I usually hide that fingernail with acrylics, but I still got the print. I was treated with rabies, and they told my mother don't expect her to live, because this treatment is very invasive, and it usually kills grown-ups. I cut my finger on our kitchen floor when I was about 1 and a half, And I remember going to a place, and I saw the blood stain on the floor. I can't describe it. It had no dimension. It had no color. But there was a voice that said, "You're all right. You're with me. Don't worry." And I remember telling my mother when I was grown about this, and she said, "How do you remember that?" She said, "Tell me what my kitchen floor looked like." I said it was white, and it had little black tiles in between each big white tile, little shaped like diamonds. She said, "How can you remember that you one?" I said, "I remember when the rat came and got me. I remember my shirt being wet and hot, and that voice told me, 'Don't worry about it. I'm not going to let him get you.'" She said, "Who?" I said, "The thing with the little red eyes." She said, "How do you remember that?" She said, "What did your crib look like?" I said, "It was a light-colored wood, and it had pale balls. One was yellow, one was pale blue, and one was pink." She said, "Child, how can you remember your crib from when you was a baby? That's your crib you're describing to me." I don't know. But when I was 12 years old, a voice came to me when the babysitter told me at 7 o'clock in the morning to go to the store and get the cereal for the kids that she babysit. The girls were, it was some girls in the store, and a voice said, "Ask those girls, can you follow them home?" I was ashamed to ask them, because I'm thinking, "No, you're real crazy. You're going to ask some strangers, can you follow them home? Why?" I said, "I'm not doing it." And I didn't. And as soon as I got to the corner, out of the blue, a man came. He said, "I got a gun in my pocket, and if you don't go in this house with me, I'm going to shoot you right here and now." The voice said, "Don't go." And I saw a rope tied to a buffet with a mattress on the floor, and I said, "I'm not going." And the voice said, "Just keep on talking. I'll send somebody outside on their porch. And when you see that person, you scream." And I kept talking. I told him all kind of lies. "My mama just died, and they're sending a body from Texas. Please don't make me go in the house with you, mister. I got some change from the cereal that the lady had me go get. I dug in the bag and gave him the change. Take the change. Don't take me in the house. Please, I'm not going. I'm doing it." And the lady came out flapping her rugs. "Lady, help me!" And the man took off and ran. The police investigated the house. There was rope tied to a buffet and a mattress sitting in front of it, just like I had described. So I've learned to trust that voice. I don't know why God has blessed me with that voice, but it's not that I'm crazy. Someone said that it's my guardian angel. And I've trusted that voice ever since that one day I didn't. Well, when I was 15, we walked across Clutch Park and I fell over the waterfall. I had nothing to grip onto. My hands were on slime. And this time I didn't hear the voice in my head. I heard it outside of my head. Said, "Felicia, come back and get Trina." And she turned around, and the voices told me to stand still, don't move, I got you. And she said, "Who called me?" And she looks, "Oh my God," and she snatched me back up. So I loved my voice. When I was 16, they found out that my ureter, that's the tube that goes to your bladder from your kidney, I was born with mine coiled around a blood vessel, and it had some kinks in it. So they had to clip it apart, take the kinks out, and put it back together. So I got 5 clips holding my ureter to my kidney together. And they said it was 1 out of 2 million surgeries. And the way that came about, they were discharging me, and I was in my room getting dressed, and the voice said, "Trina, don't get upset, but you can't go home. You got major surgery you need. If you go home, you'll die." And the doctor came in, and I was crying. He said, "Why are you crying?" I said, "Because I can't go home. Y'all got to do surgery on me." He said, "How do you know that?" I said, "Because my voice told me." He said, "I don't know who your voice is, honey, but you're right." He said, "And I don't know how they forgot to take your film off of the x-ray machine, but there's a specialist here who just did the same surgery to another little black 16-year-old girl in New York." And he said, "Who's going to do that to that child?" And I said, "We just discharged that child." He said, "You better get her back up here. She'll be dead in 2 weeks. She has a retrocaval of the right ureter, and she will be dead in 2 weeks." And he said, "I just did that surgery, and that's 1 out of 2 million people that needs that surgery." And he saved my life. Then, if I need to keep on going, then when I was 30, I started working for an OBGYN office, and I was only there for 3 weeks. And I said, "I can't believe this. I know I got my tubes tied, but these people don't think I'm crazy. I know I'm pregnant in my tubes." Went to the doctor, and sure enough, I was pregnant in my tubes. So from there, I had to get a hysterectomy. A diagnostic laparoscopy almost killed me. But after that, I got the hysterectomy. From there, I had a car accident. They knocked me almost into a person's living room. Didn't get a scratch. Only got a sprained wrist. But on my way to work that day, because I hated putting on a seatbelt, I hated it. And they had just made it a law that you got to wear your seatbelts.
Nobody's gonna tell me, put no seatbelt on, dirtying up my clothes. It's so dirty, and I have to use old, what they call a hoopie, dirtying up my clothes. It's so seatbelt, you're not gonna make me put on the seatbelt. When I see the cops, I would put my arm through the seatbelt to act like I got it on. But this morning it had just rained, and the rain had stopped, and the street was still wet, and the voice said, put your seatbelt on, you're gonna be in a car accident. You're gonna be okay, but you're gonna be disabled, and you're gonna become a drug addict, but I want you to go through some things for me, but as long as you trust in me, I'll bring you back out. I clicked the seatbelt on 2 seconds later, wham, I was almost knocked in someone's living room. The car passenger side was this close to hitting my body, but didn't touch me. Only thing I got of it was a sprained wrist, not even a fracture. But they had to put it in the cast for 2 weeks. And after that one got well, this one swole up, and they had to put this one in the cast for 2 weeks. I'm thinking, what's going on? A month later, I couldn't get up out of the bed. I felt like my whole body had been ran over by a semi-truck. After months and months of seeing doctors that diagnosed me with chronic fibromyalgia, now I live with chronic pain. Now I'm thinking, oh Lord, I'm not Job, I can't live like this. So by around about that time was the time when my mother found out that she had pancreatitis and that she had a choice to either take the medicine, you can live 10 years longer, or drink alcohol and you'll be dead within a year or two. I don't know which one she chose, but in a year or two she was dead, and I was mad. I was mad because I had fibromyalgia. I was mad because I was now labeled disabled and I couldn't work anymore. All my plans were shot to what I call hell. I was mad at God because I wasn't as strong as Job. I became addicted to pain pills and cocaine. I then suffered 2 blood clots since then. Just recently I had my gallbladder out. They said it'll be a simple overnight surgery. You'll be out in 24 hours. I stayed 3 weeks because that surgery almost killed me and my heart almost stopped working. At home, I got a teenager who's 17 who's pregnant. My 22-year-old, back in October, you know I told you all about that. She scalded me to second-degree burns. Lately, I've been going to a Coumadin lab because my blood clotting medicine's not been working. But you know what? I'm happy to be alive today because I am happier than I've ever been in my life. I have the Holy Spirit living inside of me. I ask God every morning to guide my life. Every decision I make, every move I make, I ask God to keep me in His plan. I no longer live my life thinking it's Murphy's Law. This is God's law. This is God's plan. Every trial and tribulation I've been through, I know it's because it's in His plan. I had to go through these things because there's something that He wants me to do. I have patience, and I'm waiting for Him to show me what it is. I use my G-O-D instruction manual, the Bible. Some people live by the FYI, fix it yourself. Mm-mm. I let God show me how to do it. I thank God for waking me up every morning because I no longer fear what may happen later on because I know whatever it is, it's all part of God's plans, and whatever those plans are, they include me, because I thank God for being alive today. Amen. And I just want to ask you all, you
Palms 116:2. Thank you all.